Ms. Robinson, welcome to the German Dream Project.
Thank you.
Ms. Robinson, in your life, you seem to always push the limits of our time and our culture, first as one of the world's leading human rights lawyers, then as the first female president of Ireland, followed by your position as the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. What role do you think dreaming plays in a person's life success?
I think it's important in the sense of having a wider vision, having values that are more important than just the day-to-day planning, having a wider horizon. That's always been important. And I have been very fortunate, as you said, in having work in life that engages me so I don't count the hours. And part of that is to have a wider sense of purpose and a wider vision and therefore a wider dream.
What would you say to those who believe that dreaming the future is only the privilege of children?
I would say that poets can help us. There's a wonderful poem by Seamus Heaney, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in the mid-90s, is a good friend. He wrote a poem for Amnesty International called From the Republic of Conscience, which tells the story of somebody who goes to the Republic of Conscience and their creeping privilege disappears, their arms are the one length, carrying their own luggage and so on. When they come back, an old man looks into their face and says, now you are a dual citizen. And the poem ends, their embassies are everywhere, and no ambassador would ever be relieved. What the poet was saying was, we need to become dual citizens, citizens of conscience, indeed ambassadors of conscience. And then we can secure the peace and full protection of human rights that are the birthright of everyone. So I often felt when I was president of Ireland that if I could look to the poets, they always put those dreams in a very special way and were a great help in lifting people to a wider sense of purpose, a wider sense of the connections between us as human beings on this planet.
Ireland's transformation from one of the poorest European countries into an economic powerhouse with a growth rate far higher than that of Germany is an incredible success story. In fact, Ireland nowadays is considered to be living proof that also poor countries can completely transform themselves within only a few decades. What do you think Germany could learn from Ireland about the importance of dreaming bigger?
Well, certainly, it was a great honor to be president of Ireland during 7 vital years during that transition when Ireland moved from being a country of emigration and poverty to being now a more prosperous country that is receiving immigrants from other countries. I did try to capture some of the spirit of the time. I noted that there was a lot of local self-development. They became very energized, not to depend on government. And when I was a presidential candidate during 1990 and traveled around the country and went to rural areas, went to the islands, to fishing villages, to inner cities, I found a huge commitment to working on behalf of the elderly, on behalf of young people, creating youth jobs. And many, very often people would say to me, well, we're tired asking the government. It's obviously not going to do it. We're doing it ourselves. We've got a great community here. It was important that people locally would recognize themselves how important what they were doing was, that their self-development, their active involvement was in fact generating a change in the Irish landscape.
Why do you, as someone who's observing Germany, as you're observing many other countries in the world, why do you think Germany has such a hard time with the idea of a German dream?
I think that it is probably aware that historically some of the dreams have been bad nightmares and that therefore it may be better to stay rather more pragmatic. But let's remember also the enormous contribution of German literature and the writings of the great German philosophers, of the great German writers, of the great German poets. I mean, there are so many. They touched an inner ear of people. They captured an imagination. So it does seem to me that looking at Germany's contribution to world literature and philosophy, that there is a great capacity to dream.
Ms. Robinson, it is always a challenge for journalists to ask current or former heads of states for their personal feelings about another country. But still, we dare to ask you, given all that you know and have experienced about Germany in your life, what is your own most inspiring, most expectant dream for Germany's future? What is your German dream?
Well, I would first of all say modestly that I am not an expert on Germany, but I have enjoyed my visits there. Germany is right at the center of the enlarged Europe. I see Europe as the most fortunate region within the world, really, because of its historic culture, because of its, by and large, economic advancement. It may not be the absolute richest part, but it actually is a place where people have good income and there are also good social values, and it's less sort of nakedly capitalist than some other areas. And so I think within that, it would be good for Germany and good for Europe if young leaders today, women and men, think confidently of the role that they can play, but hopefully it's a role that would very much be committed to tackling global inequalities. Those global inequalities are so stark, they shame us. I don't like when people give a whole lot of statistics. There's just one that brings it home for me, that every single day, over 30,000 little children under the age of 5 die either of hunger or of diarrhea or of malaria because the family can't afford a $5 malaria net, or of measles, all of them preventable. So I would like to see a Germany of young dual citizens, in Seamus Heaney's language, ambassadors of conscience, who understood the importance of employment and of prosperity for Germany itself, but felt that that was entirely linked to the objectives of the global call for action against poverty, to have fair trade, to have cancellation of debt for the poorest countries, to have poorer countries tackle corruption and commit to good governance and human rights, and that there would be then much greater collective security because there was a sense of really addressing the global inequalities that are really intolerable in our world. You know, I feel a certain hope because of the generous response to the Asian tsunami at the beginning of this year. But we do have silent tsunamis every week. The fact that 30,000 children die every day means that there is, within 1 week, a silent tsunami of children under 5. And that's what I think should trigger a sense of connection, a sense of energy and purpose of young Germans. And I look particularly to women because I really believe that we women in this century can be actors for change. We are already recognized more and more as actors for peace. We need to go much further and be involved in business, be involved in the trade union movement, be involved in parliament, in government, at every level, and be involved in local community and in academia, and have our voice, both practical and visionary, heard and listened to, and hopefully giving leadership.
Which leads us to one of our most important questions to you. Germany is one of the last countries in Europe and the world that has never had a female Secretary of State, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Defense, let alone a woman Chancellor or President. Let us ask you, as one of the founders of the Council of Women World Leaders, how important do you think it is for Germany's success to welcome more women in leadership positions?
I think it is very important because you have very extraordinary women. It's not so far away, I think, that there would be women holding the highest positions. It does make a difference. There's a very nice quality to it. I can tell you that I returned to Ireland on the 11th of November last for the second inauguration of my successor, President Mary McAleese. And we both tell the same story with our tongue in cheek, that now small boys in Ireland weep on their mother's knee and say, why can't I grow up to be president? But the point is that we need a balance. Society as a whole benefits from commitment and that sense of priorities and practical grassroots links that women tend to have because of their lifestyle and because of their links with children and school and hospital and local reference points. And they do bring insights. They bring a very modern way of networking to problem solve. They're less hierarchical generally. So it's very good for a country to have that kind of leadership. And certainly in the Council of Women World Leaders, we're keen to promote active involvement of women ministers networking together as currently women ministers of the environment and of health and of trade and of culture are doing so actively.
World peace has become a dream that is increasingly being equated with being a sign of naive optimism or almost a silly shallowness. You, however, speak of the dream of world peace as something very tangible, as something that humanity could and in fact must achieve someday. Why is this dream so important to you?
It's a dream that was at the heart of a very visionary initiative of a few people after the two world wars and the terrible Holocaust of the last century, when Eleanor Roosevelt and a small number of jurists, of lawyers, got together while she was chair of the Commission on Human Rights and gave us a wonderful gift of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They understood that the world needed a language and a culture of values that was universal and linked. Those values are the bedrock of having a world of peace and security. So I understand the power of vision of a relatively small number of people and their courage in going against any cynicism of the time and indeed despair. I'm very much in favor of dreams.
You once said that some 500 corporations currently control 3/4 of world trade. After your tenure as the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, you founded the Ethical Globalization Initiative, an organization that is now trying to make these companies more aware of their responsibility for worldwide human rights issues. What are your highest hopes, again, your dream, for Germany's large companies when it comes to human rights issues?
I think my dream really flows from the deeper purpose of human rights, of the international human rights framework. As Article 1 of the Universal Declaration says, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. And then secondly, that those with power would realize, meaning protect and promote those rights. And those with power initially were thought to be states. But now, of course, power has shifted. And we need to ensure that corporations accept that they too have responsibility within their sphere of influence. The experience of companies in different sectors have found that developing a matrix within the corporation and really acting from the CEO down and engaging has been very motivating for employees. They're proud of the company, and it's led to much better results on health and safety, and it's led to some exciting involvements that really motivate companies. I chair a business leaders initiative on human rights. I would be very happy if more German companies would join with us.
I think it was in an interview or in a public speech where you once said that since the birth of your first grandchild, you personally feel in a sense of hurry.
That's true. I was really amazed because I'm committed anyway. But when I saw how fortunate we were in my family to see this little boy, and he's now been joined by a little sister, as happy children in a safe environment. And I thought again of those terrible statistics of children. I've seen their faces. I've seen children die in the arms of their parents at a feeding station or of a sickness in a refugee camp that no child should be dying from. And so I am supercharged now. Young people in Germany could really interest themselves by becoming involved in the global call for action against poverty, signing up and using the white band symbol that is going to be used worldwide to draw attention. I'm a great believer, to be honest, that everyone can make a difference. And I am, as you say, in a hurry.
Ms. Robinson, in closing, may we ask, where do you personally source your greatest hope?
In young people, in the idealism of young people. What Germany can really look forward to, I think, is an inspirational leadership which can motivate young people. They're waiting for it. I think they're hungry for it. I think it's very fulfilling for young people to be stretched out of themselves. And when you have a young person coming up to you and saying, I really want to get involved, and it's nothing to do with money or a job, though they are also important. It's to do with, I want to have a purpose in my life. I think that it's the yearning of young people for a real purpose in their life, which can be harnessed by every country, and hopefully very much harnessed by Germany, which is such an important country for Europe.
Ms. Robinson, thank you very much for dreaming with us.
Okay, thank you.